This session is part of the Indie Author Fringe Conference, a three times a year author conference fringe to the major publishing fairs London Book Fair, Book Expo America, and Frankfurt Book Fair. The Indie Author Fringe is run under the stewardship of the Alliance of Independent Authors, is organised by writers for writers, and is free to attend. Let's see who's sharing self-publishing insights in this session.
Hey everybody, I'm Johnny B. Truant. The other fellow over there is Sean Platt. And we're the founders? You're the founder? We're at Sterling & Stone Partners.
We write stories, a lot of them.
We write stories, and we have, I think the company has 9 or 10 imprints now. I can't keep track of it. And we
36.
Millions of words a year that we publish, and one of the most frequent questions that we get is how, right? Like how do we produce that much, and how can I produce that much? Not me, but the person asking. That's the way that
that's
works.
You.
That's you. And so that's what we're going to talk about today, is how we write better stories faster, and how we've learned that, how we've evolved that to the process we use today, and how you can do it too.
Yeah, there's a lot to this too, because we used to just kind of gut our way through it, I guess. We would just write as fast as we possibly could. And, you know, we would have, when Johnny and I first started writing together, my other partner, David Wright, who I write like horror and sci-fi with, you know, we had our process, and we were writing serial fiction at the time with an episode a week of about, I'd say, an average of 15,000 words. And so I was used to kind of the fast production schedule, and Johnny was just kind of getting into writing fast. And when we first met, he thought that was kind of a stupid idea, writing 15,000 words a week. Like,
stupid in an enviable way, not stupid in a way that meant that I actually thought it was bad. I just didn't see how it was possible.
Yeah, it just seemed unreasonable. And I think that that's a very common misconception that writers have, is if you're writing that fast, how could it possibly be good? And, you know, it's I've always thought of it as, well, it's no different than a showrunner. You know, if you get these, you know, you have a showrunner and you have kind of a writer's room for a show like Breaking Bad, like they're, you know, or even network TV is a better example, because they really are on very strict schedules. They're turning the scripts around in a few days. And some of your favorite shows are written in only a few days. And that's, yes, they have a lot of writers working on them, but that's kind of our mentality, that one and one is five or six or seven. And, you know, we treat our stories like a writer's room. And when Johnny and I first started writing together, it was as simple as, you know, me coming out with a very simple, like one page, two page, three page outline. And then Johnny turning that into a full book. And, you know, now we're a lot more detailed. So everything from, you know, all our pre-production before we even start word one, all the way through our launch process, we're just a little more detailed than we used to be, a little more dialed in. But we've also been doing this for 4 years now. So, you know, that's a long time to be working on both the craft of how we actually put our stories together, but also the process of how we go from, you know, nothing to a finished book.
Right. It's been an iterative improvement where we've worked on this. I don't want to say systems too much, because it begins to sound like a factory, but there are systems that work with good writing. So where do you want to begin with this? Do you want to?
Well, we could talk about just genre foundations, you know, right? Where we're kind of, if you want to write a book that has an eager audience, that's
write and publish a book. Maybe we should back up just a second and describe that this isn't literally just like, how do you write a book faster? How do you write a market? How do you write a book that is desired by your sort of sweet spot of your target market and what you want to write, and then actually, you know, publish it and profit from it?
Right. And that's a huge distinction, because if you're, as a writer, you're just writing what you want to write, that could be really fun and it could be really emotionally rewarding, say. But if you're not picking a genre where there are a lot of readers, or, you know, the great American novel is a really awesome concept, you know, but there aren't a lot of people ready and eager to read the next great American novel. But there are a lot of people who are ready to read the next great romance read, or the next great sci-fi read, or specifically the next great, you know, alien invasion or sci-fi colonization or, you know, space opera. There's all these subgenres. And if you know your genre and subgenre, you're just going to have a much easier time connecting with your audience and finding eager readers. Now, we're not making judgment calls here as to, you know, one is better than the other or anything like that. We're just talking about the simple math of if there's a large pool of readers over here who want the kind of story that you want to tell, you're much more likely to find an audience who is, you know, likely to really be interested in the kind of story that you're writing. And therefore, they're going to buy that book. They'll review that book. They'll tell their friends about that book, and they'll be eager to read the next thing that you write.
Right. And if you have a great American novel incubating, then what better ways to get eyes on it? Not that those are necessarily transferable eyes from your alien invasion book to your tale of woe in the South in the 1940s or something. But my point is you at least have an audience. So I do want to make one clearer point here, because I can see the artists sort of saying, well, this is selling out. Like, why would I not work on my passion project, the thing that's been speaking to me forever? And why would I instead go and find something where it's highly commercial? And it's about finding the intersection. So the book that we're going to use sort of an example case study for this is our book, Invasion. And that book started with, it was actually an original pitch that Sean and Dave, his other writing partner, made to a different publisher. So it was already in our, we call it the story garden, right? Like, this is the place where we have these ideas. And it wasn't that we said, well, this is, you know, let's find a hot genre, alien invasion, hot genre. So let's manufacture something that we don't really want to write in order to capitalize. It was that, what do we have that we want to write anyway, that we've already thought about writing, we already have sort of a vague sketch, and that intersects with something that we know that's highly commercial. So I'm sure there were other ideas in the garden, which I'm not remembering right now, that we passed over because we like to write everything, Sean and I do, and so we specifically were looking for something that would be a very consumable hit, so we passed over some stuff that wouldn't have had the same market fit. You're looking for that.
Yeah, I actually don't think it's possible to just, you know, shoot into a barrel. And you can look for a really hot genre with a big reader base, but if you aren't genuinely interested in writing in that space, your work isn't going to connect with the readers who are used to that genre. They're just, it's not, because you have to tell the story that is true to you, and you have to be interested in the genre that you write. So thrillers is a very hot genre right now, as is romance, you know, and probably that's never going to go away. You know, romance is always hot. Thrillers are always hot. But if you don't read thrillers, or if you don't read romance and you try to write one of those genres, you're not going to understand what the readers are looking for. You're not going to understand why they read what they read. And your work is going to be hollow, and it's just not going to strike any chord with the people who are reading it, and you'll flop. But if you really like reading thrillers, for example, and or romances, and you but you're embarrassed to write that kind of story, and you feel like you're not going to be taken seriously unless you write a serious literary novel, well, you're kind of shortchanging yourself, because you will be able to take your literary sensibilities, plug them into the story that you want to tell in that genre, and probably do pretty well. And if you're embarrassed, you don't want to use your real name for something as lowly as a romance book or a thriller, then pick a pen name. But you can still have fun writing. You can still, you know, generate interest in your work. You can still, you know, sharpen your saw by doing the work and getting it out there. And in the meantime, you know, you can work on the other book, and it's all iterative. It's all working on the craft.
So the first step is to begin looking for those genres that are commercial and that intersect with something you might be interested in, but not genre specifically. Not genre more generally, but a specific subgenre. So in the case of Invasion, there is a subgenre on most booksellers of science fiction that is specifically alien invasion, and so you always want to find a narrow focus of rabid fans rather than a wide focus and say, okay, well, I don't want to have aliens in it because I want it to apply to, you know, I want the military fiction people to be interested in it too, when there's no real military in this alien invasion. You want to find that core group of ravenous fans, and you do that by narrowing down to a subgenre that's not so obscure that there's nobody in it. So you basically are going to want to look at rankings, ranking trends within a subgenre that you feel is hot and say, okay, well, are these books ranked in the millions in this subgenre, or are they still competitive enough ranks that you can tell people are buying them? So in our case, we were looking at science fiction with alien invasion under it. And there's no, that's not a coincidence that we named the book Invasion. Like, we wanted it to be very clear to people what that was about. Like, we want a clear value proposition. And you can go, you can and should go through, you know, read a few books in the genre if you haven't already done so. You want to get a feel for what people are interested in, what people are talking about, and then look at the reviews, positive, like 5 stars and 4 stars. I'm sorry, 5 stars and 1 stars. See what people love about the books that they're buying and reviewing at the top of the charts, and then see what people hate. Like, this was great, but, you know, if you're writing a romance, this was great, but the hero, I saw something with a friend of ours that they didn't like names that were unsexy. So I love this, but if the guy's name weren't Eugene, I would have loved it so much more. Now I hated it because his name was Eugene and that wasn't sexy. But
really, looking at the 1 stars and the 5 stars will tell you all you need to know about your kind of your genre conventions. The things about that particular style of book, because the 3 stars, those are indifferent. Like, don't even waste your time. The 5 stars are going to tell you what people love about it, and the 1 stars are going to tell you what's missing, what this author didn't quite get right, what people are expecting from that genre, but didn't, you know, that itch wasn't scratched. And if you take all of that stuff, you can really bring it into your story shopping, as we call it, or your outlining phase, and really build a stronger foundation before you even start writing.
Well, so let's talk about story shopping. So story shopping is, there's a long and storied history here, which you guys won't care about, but we think that this is a 2.0 version of what we used to do a while ago, where it was very much just like a loose Cliff's Notes, where this happens, then this happens. Story shopping has evolved for us. And by the way, that's after a software product that we developed for shopping stories. And it basically, the idea is there are 3 main components to developing a story world ahead of time in advance of writing. And only one of them is actually outlining like plot stuff. The other 2 that we do are sort of cinematic conventions, and one is looking at characters, and we specifically cast characters. We say, who would play this person in a movie? And looking at locations as well, because locations are like a character in your story, so that you can begin getting a feel for the world that your people inhabit.
And the characters themselves, we really want to get to know them. So we use something called a character DNA, which is, of course, built into the software. And it asks us a lot of questions. It's like your characters are all going through interviews. And so you're answering these questions and you get to,
like, what was your earliest memory? And what do you hate about people who annoy you, or something like that? Like, the sort of things you might ask a person to get a gauge on their personality.
Right. And you may not use this stuff in the actual narrative itself.
Probably won't, actually.
Right. But it really helps you to know who these people are so that you can write about them in a really fluid way. And that's just kind of exciting. I mean, it's definitely a sexy way to put a story together, because you know these people and you're really intimately familiar with them when you're building the outline. But it also makes the writing easier, because you're just telling stories about people that you know. So the story shopping starts with the different characters and the locations, and then it just moves into full outline mode with, you know, very basic story structure that we use that you probably know if you're listening to this. Whatever, like whether it's the hero's journey or, you know, romance is clearly big, you know, and they have very certain rhythms that story has to follow. So you could just plug that into your outline. And
like, the most obvious of those would be that it has to have a happy ending. Do not try to have a romance without a happy ending.
Because then, by definition, right, it's not a romance. And so the idea isn't to, and I know, you know, there's plotters and pantsers, and probably, you know, the pantsers are like, I'm not gonna outline. But for us, you know, we write a lot of stories. And we've done it both ways. We've certainly pantsed stuff, and we've definitely plotted stuff. And I'll tell you, the plotted stuff is easier to write, and it's usually more reader pleasing, and we have less mistakes to fix.
Well, and you don't necessarily in I mean, in the way that we story shop right now, it's not as linear, it's not as delineated as plotting and pantsing, because the nature of the outline is flexible. Like, you're basically
extremely
right. Like, these are the points that I want to hit. Or you can say, well, Bob turned left, Bob turned right, and go down to the specific granularity of things.
But we never do that. They're always very, we paint in broad strokes so that there's enough, you know, because the story shopping is actually my job. Although as we evolve, you know, Johnny will start story shopping too, because it's awesome. And so he's like, why do you always get to story shop? This sucks. I want to story shop. So the way it is now, I do the story shopping and then Johnny starts the actual writing process. And the job of a quality story shopped outline is that there's enough material there to really have him understand who the people are and the world they inhabit and the very broad strokes of what has to happen in the story.
Yeah, that's key, actually. So if remember, there are three parts to this. There's location scouting, there's casting, so basically characters and location, and then there's plot. And so if you think that you're a pure pantser, and like Stephen King says, he just starts writing and he has no idea. If that's you, you could almost just ignore it. And if you don't have story shop to like help you create character profiles, then you can do this some other way. You know, just have an idea, say, you know, write out everything that you know about a character and maybe gather some images and keep them together somehow so that you're able to cobble together a dossier of what this person might be like or what a location might be like. Not just locations like this person lives in Irvine, California, but, you know, if it's a powerful executive and how has he designed his office? Like that sort of thing. Like there are sections in the software that we use to, you know, this is his den at home, and this is his office, and this is where he grew up. We had a story recently where Sean did a whole segment on like where the guy grew up, which informed his character. And that's a big deal.
Yeah. Writer's block often comes from either not being enthusiastic about what you're going to write or not being informed about what you're going to write. And a quality story shopped outline kind of addresses both of those things. And, you know, since Johnny, you're the one who has to take care of the writing, the first draft, do you want to talk a little bit about the writing process itself?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to vary by genre, and these are things that you're going to want to consider the genre closely before you begin. And so there are obvious things like tense and person. So the trend right now in romance is to write first person present tense. And the trend in science fiction, I would say, by and large, still is third person past tense. You know, John did this versus I am doing this. And so those are the obvious things. And I think you'll find if you write multiple genres, there are different states of sort of flow that you may or may not get into. But when we were writing Invasion, since that's sort of our case study book, we were trying to do a few things. We were trying to keep the chapters short and punchy. We were trying to not have, and this is something we didn't entirely succeed in Invasion. I think we did okay, but there were, like, you don't want to have a whole lot of internal monologues. And I think later in the series, we got better at that because the people who read these want a fast pace. They just like, you know, tell me what happened. And I want to know about
the character. Yeah, there's exposition. They want it delivered through dialogue. They want it to move.
They want it to move. And that was the goal from Go was, how can we make this book move fast? And in that we succeeded because the most common review we see is, you know, damn you, I stayed up all night and now I can't get up for my job because I just had to read one more chapter.
And that's what you want your readers to be saying.
Right. So for science fiction, this would also be true of thrillers and a lot of maybe more tightly paced plotted stuff, is we wanted short chapters. We wanted cliffhangers, like a lot. Not every chapter was going to end on a cliffhanger, but there was one cliffhanger that I remember showing to Sean where a group was coming up and they were reacting to something. Like they were driving, I think, toward Vegas, and they were reacting. Like they were like, somebody's eyes got wide or something. And then somebody said, what are you looking at, or what is it? And the final sentence of the chapter was that. And then it clipped away to another character. So a character, a reader is going to get to the end of that chapter and go, what? Like, what is that? What do you mean, what? And so we were trying to create sort of frustrating tension pulling the story forward. But if you're writing, well, literary fiction isn't a great example because it's not terribly commercial. But if you are, you don't want that. You don't want a lot of cliffhangers. You want maybe a more languishing pace where there's a lot of description and music to the language. So it's going to vary depending on genre. But I feel like I've said too much. Do you have anything to hop in here before I continue?
No, actually, it's knowing what your reader wants. And I think really talking about editing there is smart because genres are different. Genre conventions are different. And so knowing what kind of style you want is something you can really take care of in the editing process because no one gets it right their first time. And one of the reasons that we believe so fully in the outlining model, even if we totally break from the outline, is the fact that, you know, we've got a certain flow to maintain, and you can put a lot more in that draft and then clean it up in the second. But people who think, you know, I don't want to do the work of an outline, you are doing the work of an outline. You're just doing
You're doing it in the trenches.
Right. Or you're doing it in the cleanup. And so for us, a lot of the editing is actually taken care of in pre-production because we just have more clarity on the story that we're going to tell. But still, there's editing. You know, we always have three drafts, if not four, before it goes to our editor. And that means that, you know, we're really getting that story in shape. So there's some production editing that happens. As far as developmental and knowing, okay, well, there's too much inner monologuing here. We're saying the same thing in this place. You know, as you're telling yourself the story, it certainly makes sense that you would repeat yourself. So we just take out the times when we repeat ourselves, take out the times when we're clearly trying to explain something to ourselves instead of the reader. And then we also do something called reverse foreshadowing. Which, you know, is a big part of what happens in that second pass through. And that's, you know, I love this example. We were writing a book called The Dream Engine. And at the very end, this bakery burns down. And it's this really, like, you know, emotional.
What's the name of the bakery?
It's Carlo's Bakery. It's Carlo's Bakery. Carlo's Bakery burns down. And it's this really emotionally resonant moment in the book, except that it wasn't.
Except that we hadn't foreshadowed any of it. And there were people following along live. We wrote this book live. And so they reach this climactic moment and we're like, oh, that happened. And they go, okay, well, I had no idea that was coming. And
right. There's nothing emotional about it because we hadn't built the case, which is fine. That's what a first draft is for. But in that second draft, we had to go in and make sure that we added Carlo's Bakery. And we had to make sure that Isla, the main character, and her mother went there, you know, on Saturday mornings during her childhood, holding hands and looking in the case, you know, gazing at pastries, because only then does it matter that it burns down at the end. So it's really important to...
We actually have turned that into a verb. So we'll say we're going to Carlo's Bakery this incident in the book.
Yeah, because it's foreshadowing is really important, but you can't always get it your first time through because you don't necessarily know what that story is about. So the first time through, it's most important to tell that story to yourself. But the second and the third time through, you know, you're getting it ready for an audience. You're getting it ready for readers. So I like to say that, you know, it's the first draft is say it. Second draft is say what you mean. And the third draft is say it well. And then if there's a fourth draft, that's just say it really, really well. And then send it off to your editor and let them make sure that, you know, you have all your commas in the right place. You're the actual punctuation and copy editing, that's really for your editor to take care of. You want to get your story in the best shape possible so that when it comes back from the editor, you're totally ready for, you know, packaging and production and launch, essentially.
We work collaboratively pretty much 100% of what we do now. But if you're solo, you would just basically do what we do amongst yourselves and possibly incorporating a group of beta readers. So our typical flow usually goes, I write first draft, Sean does editing several rounds, and then it goes to our editor. But there are a few books where I need to come back for a second continuity edit, basically. And that means that I basically need to read it again and just make sure that everything is lined up the way that it should be. Like if we mention something did it make it to the next act? And if did the foreshadowing make sense? Because we're oftentimes working out of order. And that's sort of a developmental level edit that we do for ourselves. And you may find that better suited to like a beta reader. Not to be going to you and making through that you haven't screwed up. Like, don't be lazy. Like, sometimes people will send something to an editor and be like, they'll fix it for me.
I know the third act doesn't work, but that's what editors are for.
Or I haven't bothered to add any of my punctuation. You'll do it for me.
Yeah, that's not what an editor is for. You need to, first of all, you're paying your editor, you want to pay them for the right job, and they only have so much time to work on your draft. If you give them a draft that wasn't ready to be sent to them, they're going to be spending a lot of time that they could be, making your story good to great, just barely good. So that's really important. But once you get it back from the editor, you really do want to pay attention to your packaging. And I think that's a place where a lot of indie authors kind of fall short, because that's something that's just been handled by traditional publishers, by pretty much forever. And so it's our job as indies, we have to get our covers, we have to get our compiles, we have to write our product descriptions, we have to launch the book to our list. Hopefully you have a list. If not, you need to build one. And that starts with the first book or before the first book, but all of that stuff, that packaging and launch, is something that you can't underestimate. It is part of the process.
Let's just go ahead and say it. People really do judge a book by its cover. I don't know why people say that you shouldn't do that, because everybody in the world does it. And it has never been more true than now. If you have a cover that is either number one, bad, or number two, unprofessional, which is sort of the same as bad, or number three, not genre appropriate. Like, it may be a great cover and it just doesn't fit.
Yeah, we've had a few examples of that in our own,
Right. Like, we'll like the cover, but it doesn't say shapeshifter book. It doesn't say alien invasion book.
And it's worth saying that all the stuff that we're talking about is stuff that we've learned over the last 4 years. It's all stuff that, we've thought, oh, we've got this. And, we had one of our covers for a book called The Beam, was a beautiful cover that we had, custom illustrated, and it so wasn't appropriate to the genre, and it took us like 3 years to realize it.
So you want to just say, not is this a good cover, but does it sort of fit in with the other covers? One of our podcast guests, I think it was Ed Robertson, gave the example of space opera. And I just think this is great. So, like, if you have space opera, it needs to have a ship or a planet or a ship orbiting a planet. And if you don't have that, then it doesn't look like a space opera, and all the space opera people are going to ignore it. So all of you space opera authors out there who have like a person on the cover and nothing else, you need to create something that has a ship or a planet or a ship on a planet. And once you have that calling card in place for people to basically see it and say, okay, I get what that is. Like, I get it. It's not just an instant shorthand that this is the kind of book that I'm interested in, but it is also something that is compelling and draws the eye. Then the job of the, your title is obviously part of that as well. I mean, our title was Invasion. So if you're into alien invasion, kind of hard to miss the fact that the cover that has the ships and it's called Invasion. And it may also be worth mentioning just very briefly, we actually did the cover first with this one. We had the title, then we had the cover, then we wrote the story.
And that cover kind of helped inform the story a little bit, because there was a certain way that our cover designer made the ships look, which was really cool. And it just became the way the ships looked, because why not describe them as they are on the cover? And they have a unique shape, and that shape became part of the lore in the series, which is really cool. And, but again, that's all stuff that happened during the outlining process.
Lots of little details of things that we've learned over the years.
Yeah. And that's the thing. This is all, a lot of indie publishing is frontier, and, we are figuring it out as we go along and getting better and better and better. And at this point, we've brought almost 100 books to market in our little publishing company. And so we've learned a lot. We've developed our own software to make our outlines sharper.
From necessity, by the way. That's the reason we did it. It's not like we said, let's just create some software. It's like, well, we need this tool to write better stories. Like, we are storytellers first. What is the best tool that we can have to make our pre-production as smooth as possible and allow us to write as many stories as we do. That was born of necessity, as are some of our other tools. And there's just a lot of minutiae. I mean, we're giving you the quick version here. We're giving you the like 45 minute, what can we get into you?
Yeah. So if you want the actual app, at the time that we're recording this, it's still in beta. But I think you could maybe sign up for the beta. It's at getstoryshop.com. You can go there. And if you want to hear the stuff that we've talked about in, you know, condensing to 40 minutes, we're going to do a 10-hour bootcamp, something much longer, that starts, I think it's June 13th.
It's June 13th, and it's free, which is important. It's 3 to 5 Eastern time, Monday through Friday of that week. So starting June 13th, Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m., and it's free. And that's at sterlingandstone.net/bootcamp, which you can sign up for that. And you sign up there, and you can get that and observe it, you know, watch it.
Yeah, so that is free, and it's basically all the stuff that we just talked about, but elaborated. You know, so if we talked about pre-production, you know, we'll actually spend a whole day just talking about pre-production, answering questions.
You don't need to be there live, by the way. You just need to watch within 24 hours.
Yeah, you will need to be there live to ask questions. Right. But you know, if you have a question, probably somebody else has a question too, and it will be asked.
But the details of like, you know, what we've learned about launch and promotion and the best ways to write blurbs and, you know, it's just a ton of stuff. Building email lists and email sequences and all this stuff that we just can't fit in. We'll discuss a lot more of that in the bootcamp.
Right.
So anyway, I guess that's it. Our final sign off would be, again, if you are interested in that bootcamp, it's sterlingandstone.net/bootcamp. And I'll mention Story Shop one more time if you're curious about that. It's getstoryshop.com. And we are Johnny and Sean from Sterling and Stone.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everybody.
You've been listening to another great session brought to you by the Indie Author Fringe and the Alliance of Independent Authors, Ally. You can find out more about both by visiting Ally's Self-Publishing Advice Center, www.selfpublishingadvice.org. Now, go write and publish.